Chapter 40. Prettier than spangles. It may be objected that they are not adapted to the daylight, but everybody knows that they would glitter if there were lamps, and nothing can be clearer than that if people give fancy balls in the daytime, and the dresses do not show quite as well as they would by night. The fault lies solely with the people who give the fancy balls, and is in no wise chargeable on the spangles. Such was the convincing reasoning of Mr. Solomon Lucas, and influenced by such arguments did Mr. Tubman, Mr. Winkle, and Mr. Snodgrass engage to array themselves in costumes which his taste and experience induced him to recommend as admirably suited to the occasion. A carriage was hired from the Town Arms for the accommodation of the Pickwickians, and a chariot was ordered from the same repository for the purpose of conveying Mr. and Mrs. Poet to Mrs. Leo Hunter's grounds, which Mr. Poet, as a delicate acknowledgement of having received an invitation, had already confidently predicted in the Tansville Gazette would present a scene of varied and delicious enchantment, a bewildering coruscation of beauty and talent, a lavish and prodigal display of hospitality above all, a degree of splendor softened by the most exquisite taste, and adornment refined with perfect harmony and the chastest good keeping, compared with which the fabled gorgeousness of Eastern fairyland itself would appear to be clothed in as many dark and murky colors as must be the mind of the splenetic and unmanly being who could presume to taint with the venom of his envy the preparations made by the virtuous and highly distinguished lady at whose shrine this humble tribute of admiration was offered. Apostrophe. This last was a piece of biting sarcasm against the Independent, who, in consequence of not having been invited at all, had been, through four numbers, affecting to sneer at the whole affair, in his very largest type, with all the adjectives in capital letters. The morning came. It was a pleasant sight to behold Mr. Tubman in full brigand's costume, with a very tight jacket, sitting like a pincushion over his back and shoulders, the upper portion of his legs encased in the velvet shorts, and the lower part thereof swathed in the complicated bandages to which all brigands are peculiarly attached. It was pleasing to see his open and ingenuous countenance, well mustachioed and corked, looking out from an open shirt collar, and to contemplate the sugar loaf hat, decorated with ribbons of all colors, which he was compelled to carry on his knee, inasmuch as no known conveyance with a top to it would admit of any man's carrying it between his head and the roof. Equally humorous and agreeable was the appearance of Mr. Snodgrass in blue satin trunks and cloak, white silk tights and shoes, and Grecian helmet, which everybody knows, and if they do not, Mr. Solomon Lucas did, to have been the regular authentic everyday costume of a troubadour, from the earliest ages down to the time of their final disappearance from the face of the earth. All this was pleasant, but this was as nothing compared with the shouting of the populace when the carriage drew up behind Mr. Poet's chariot, which chariot itself drew up at Mr. Poet's door, which door itself opened and displayed the great poet accoutred as a Russian officer of justice, with a tremendous note in his hand tastefully typical of the stern and mighty power of the Tansville Gazette and the fearful lashings it bestowed on public offenders. Bravo! Apostrophe, apostrophe, shouted Mr. Tubman and Mr. Snodgrass from the passage, when they beheld the walking allegory. Bravo! Apostrophe, apostrophe, Mr. Pickwick was heard to exclaim, from the passage. Hooroar poet! Apostrophe, apostrophe, shouted the populace. Amid these salutations, Mr. Poet, smiling with that kind of bland dignity which sufficiently testified that he felt his power and knew how to exert it, got into the chariot. Then there emerged from the house Mrs. Poet, who would have looked very like Apollo if she hadn't had a gown on, conducted by Mr. Winkle, who, in his light red coat, could not possibly have been mistaken for anything but a sportsman, if he had not borne an equal resemblance to a general postman. Last of all came Mr. Pickwick, whom the boys applauded as loud as anybody, probably under the impression that his tights and gaiters were some remnants of the Dark Ages. And then the two vehicles proceeded towards Mrs. Leo Hunter's. Mr. Weller, who was to assist in waiting, being stationed on the box of that in which his master was seated. Every one of the men, women, boys, girls, and babies, who were assembled to see the visitors in their fancy dresses, screamed with delight and ecstasy, when Mr. Pickwick, with the brigand on one arm, and the troubadour on the other, walked solemnly up the entrance. Never were such shouts heard as those which greeted Mr. Tupman's efforts to fix the sugar loaf hat on his head, by way of entering the garden in style. The preparations were on the most delightful scale, fully realizing the prophetic poet's anticipations about the gorgeousness of Eastern fairyland, and at once affording a sufficient contradiction to the malignant statements of the reptile independent. The grounds were more than an acre and a quarter in extent, and they were filled with people. Never was such a blaze of beauty, and fashion, and literature. There was the young lady who did the poetry in the Etansville Gazette, in the garb of a sultana, leaning upon the arm of the young gentleman who did the review department, and who was appropriately habited in the field marshal's uniform, the boots excepted. There were hosts of these geniuses, and any reasonable person would have thought it honor enough to meet them. But more than these, there were half a dozen lions from London authors, real authors, who had written whole books, and printed them afterwards, and here you might see them, walking about, like ordinary men, smiling, and talking aye, and talking pretty considerable nonsense too, no doubt with the benign intention of rendering themselves intelligible to the common people about them. Moreover, there was a band of music in pasteboard caps, four something-een singers in the costume of their country, and a dozen hired waiters in the costume of their country and very dirty costume too. And above all, there was Mrs. Leo Hunter in the character of Minerva, receiving the company, and overflowing with pride and gratification at the notion of having called such distinguished individuals together. Apostrophe Mr. Pickwick, ma'am, apostrophe said a servant, as that gentleman approached the presiding goddess, with his hat in his hand, and the brigand and troubadour on either arm. What? Where? Apostrophe exclaimed Mrs. Leo Hunter, starting up, in an affected rapture of surprise. Here, apostrophe said Mr. Pickwick. Is it possible that I have really the gratification of beholding Mr. Pickwick himself? Apostrophe apostrophe ejaculated Mrs. Leo Hunter. No other, ma'am, apostrophe replied Mr. Pickwick, bowing very low. Permit me to introduce my friends Mr. Tupman, Mr. Winkle, Mr. Snodgrass to the authoress of The Expiring Frog. Apostrophe very few people but those who have tried it know what a difficult process it is to bow in green velvet smalls, and a tight jacket, and high crowned hat, or in blue satin trunks and white silks, or knee cords and top boots that were never made for the wearer, and have been fixed upon him without the remotest reference to the comparative dimensions of himself and the suit. Never were such distortions as Mr. Tupman's frame underwent in his efforts to appear easy and graceful. Never was such ingenious posturing as his fancy-dressed friends exhibited. Apostrophe Mr. Pickwick, apostrophe said Mrs. Leo Hunter, I must make you promise not to stir from my side the whole day. There are hundreds of people here that I must positively introduce you to. Apostrophe, you are very kind, ma'am, apostrophe said Mr. Pickwick. In the first place, here are my little girls. I had almost forgotten them, apostrophe said Minerva, carelessly pointing towards a couple of full-grown young ladies, of whom one might be about 20, and the other a year or two older, and who were dressed in very juvenile costumes, whether to make them look young, or their mama younger, Mr. Pickwick does not distinctly inform us. They are very beautiful, apostrophe said Mr. Pickwick, as the juveniles turned away, after being presented. They are very like their mama, sir, apostrophe said Mr. Poet, majestically. Oh, you naughty man, apostrophe exclaimed Mrs. Leo Hunter, playfully tapping the editor's arm with her fan, Minerva with a fan. Dot, why now, my dear Mrs. Hunter, apostrophe said Mr. Poet, who was trumpeter in ordinary at the den, you know that when your picture was in the exhibition of the Royal Academy, last year, everybody inquired whether it was intended for you, or your youngest daughter. For you were so much alike, that there was no telling the difference between you. Apostrophe, well, and if they did, why need you repeat it, before strangers? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mrs. Leo Hunter, bestowing another tap on the slumbering lion of the Atansville Gazette. Count, count, apostrophe, screamed Mrs. Leo Hunter to a well-whiskered individual in a foreign uniform, who was passing by. Ah, you want me? Apostrophe said the Count, turning back. I want to introduce two very clever people to each other, apostrophe said Mrs. Leo Hunter. Apostrophe Mr. Pickwick, I have great pleasure in introducing you to Count Smorlturk. Apostrophe she added in a hurried whisper to Mr. Pickwick, the famous foreigner gathering materials for his great work on England M. Count Smorlturk, Mr. Pickwick. Apostrophe Mr. Pickwick saluted the Count with all the reverence due to so great a man, and the Count drew forth a set of tablets. What do you say, Mrs. Hunt? Apostrophe apostrophe inquired the Count, smiling graciously on the gratified Mrs. Leo Hunter. Pickwick or Bickwig, what do you call lawyer A? I see that is it. Bickwig and the Count was proceeding to enter Mr. Pickwick in his tablets, as a gentleman of the long robe, who derived his name from the profession to which he belonged, when Mrs. Leo Hunter interposed. No, no, Count, apostrophe said the lady, Pickwick. Apostrophe, ah, ah, I see, apostrophe replied the Count. P. Christian name, Weeks surname, good, ver good. P. Weeks. How you do, Weeks? Apostrophe, quite well, I thank you, apostrophe replied Mr. Pickwick, with all his usual affability. Have you been long in England? Apostrophe, long ver long time fortnight more. Apostrophe, do you stay here long? Apostrophe, apostrophe, 1 week. Apostrophe, you will have enough to do, apostrophe said Mr. Pickwick smiling, to gather all the materials you want in that time. Apostrophe, A, they are gathered, apostrophe said the Count. Indeed. Apostrophe, apostrophe said Mr. Pickwick. They are here, apostrophe added the Count, tapping his forehead significantly. Large book at home full of notes, music, picture, science, pottery, politic, all things. Apostrophe, the word politics, sir, apostrophe said Mr. Pickwick, comprises in itself a difficult study of no inconsiderable magnitude. Apostrophe, ah. Apostrophe, apostrophe said the Count, drawing out the tablets again, for good fine words to begin a chapter. Chapter 47. Politics. The word politics surprises by himself apostrophe, and down went Mr. Pickwick's remark, in Count Smorlturk's tablets, with such variations and additions as the Count's exuberant fancy suggested, or his imperfect knowledge of the language occasioned. Count, apostrophe said Mrs. Leo Hunter. Apostrophe Mrs. Hunt, apostrophe replied the Count. This is Mr. Snodgrass, a friend of Mr. Pickwick's, and a poet. Apostrophe, stop, apostrophe exclaimed the Count, bringing out the tablets once more. Head, pottery chapter, literary friend's name, Snowgrass, ver good. Introduced to Snowgrass great poet, friend of Pickwick's by Mrs. Hunt, which wrote other sweet poem what is that name? Fog perspiring fog ver good indeed. Apostrophe and the Count put up his tablets, and with sundry bows and acknowledgments walked away, thoroughly satisfied that he had made the most important and valuable additions to his stock of information. Wonderful man, Count Smorlturk, apostrophe said Mrs. Leo Hunter. Sound philosopher, apostrophe said Mr. Poet. Clear-headed, strong-minded person, apostrophe added Mr. Snodgrass. A chorus of bystanders took up the shout of Count Smorlturk's praise, shook their heads sagely, and unanimously cried, "Very!" As the enthusiasm in Count Smorlturk's favor ran very high, his praises might have been sung until the end of the festivities, if the four something-een singers had not ranged themselves in front of a small apple tree, to look picturesque, and commenced singing their national songs, which appeared by no means difficult of execution, inasmuch as the grand secret seemed to be, that three of the something-een singers should grunt, while the fourth howled. This interesting performance having concluded amidst the loud plaudits of the whole company, a boy forthwith proceeded to entangle himself with the rails of a chair, and to jump over it, and crawl under it, and fall down with it, and do everything but sit upon it, and then to make a cravat of his legs, untie them round his neck, and then to illustrate the ease with which a human being can be made to look like a magnified toad, all which feats yielded high delight and satisfaction to the assembled spectators. After which, the voice of Mrs. Poet was heard to chirp faintly forth, something which Courtesy interpreted into a song, which was all very classical, and strictly in character, because Apollo was himself a composer, and composers can very seldom sing their own music or anybody else's either. This was succeeded by Mrs. Leo Hunter's recitation of her far-famed ode to an expiring frog, which was encored once, and would have been encored twice, if the major part of the guests, who thought it was high time to get something to eat, had not said that it was perfectly shameful to take advantage of Mrs. Hunter's good nature. So although Mrs. Leo Hunter professed her perfect willingness to recite the ode again, her kind and considerate friends wouldn't hear of it on any account, and the refreshment room being thrown open, all the people who had ever been there before scrambled in with all possible dispatch, Mrs. Leo Hunter's usual course of proceedings being to issue cards for 100, and breakfast for 50, or in other words, to feed only the very particular lions, and let the smaller animals take care of themselves. "Where is Mr. Poet?" said Mrs. Leo Hunter, as she placed the aforesaid lions around her. "Here I am," said the editor, from the remotest end of the room, far beyond all hope of food, unless something was done for him by the hostess. "Won't you come up here?" Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.